Welcome to Fast Forward, a podcast about philanthropy in Minnesota and beyond. I'm your host, Levi Weinhagen. I am a communications and media specialist at the Minnesota Council on Foundations. This episode is my conversation with Kate Barr, the executive director of the Nonprofit Assistance Fund. So you're Kate Barr.
I'm Kate Barr.
And
I'm the executive director of Nonprofits Assistance Fund.
Which I read as you know a lot about money and how people need to track it, but also the ways people are anxious about it.
Yeah, and what it means is that I know everything from the technical side of accounting and how you keep track of it to the bigger picture strategic side of how does the financial structure and business model of a nonprofit make it either possible or difficult for them to actually achieve what they're after. So there's a whole realm of what goes in between there, which is one of the things that makes it complicated.
And I want to ask you some things about foundations and their relationship to budgetary items and how they think about the nonprofits that they're working with. But I also just wanted to quickly get into one thing I notice about it, I pull from your work, is you seem to also be very aware of the sort of the emotional human side of people's relationship to money as well. You always seem to fold that in.
Yeah, because money is an emotional thing. Money, in fact, is money and talking about the financial condition of either your organization or your business or your foundation or your personal life has all kind of, everyone brings baggage with them and it has to be addressed. And I think that one of the disservices that the financial world has done to nonprofits and foundations has been to kind of bring this heavy-handed, frankly judgmental feel to it. And I think that one of the first things we have to do in order to really be able to make wise and smart decisions is to deal with it.
So in the area of when a funder, a foundation, is thinking about who they're supporting and in what ways they're supporting, there is that question of, do they qualify?
Right.
And then there's the sort of more abstract question of, can they get the most out of this kind of funding?
Right.
So I was hoping you could sort of speak about that thought process.
Yeah. So part of the is do they qualify question is that we often are asked by foundations if we have some sort of a resource or a tool that they can use that's kind of almost like a checklist. If there's some sort of a 10 criteria or a couple of ratios or some boxes that we can check that says, as long as we can check all these boxes, this nonprofit's okay, and the financial questions are satisfied, and then we can go on to the other questions. And of course, it's not a surprise, there is no such thing. And part of the reason there is no such thing is because it all depends. And that answer of it depends can be frustrating, but it's also actually pretty empowering because what matters and what makes a difference has a lot to do with what it is that you're trying to accomplish. What's the organization trying to accomplish? What is the foundation trying to do in partnership with this nonprofit? And what is the financial condition and the financial situation that's needed in order to do that? And it's very different if you're talking about a major arts institution building a new wing on their building versus the question of a small community-led young organization that is really trying to do community engagement. Those are different financial questions, and so the answers are going to be different. So there's no easy checklist.
But there are probably like rules and regulations that...
There are some rules and regulations, and there are probably a handful of, I wouldn't say absolutes, but there are certainly a handful of signs of strength and health and a handful of signs of red flags. And one of the most critical signs of health is also something that some foundations actually really struggle with, which is one of the best signs of a financially healthy nonprofit is a nonprofit that ends their operating year with a surplus. And some foundations still object to that and think that it really should all balance out to zero every year because that means that you used every penny to really achieve your mission. Yet a surplus is actually probably the number one indicator of health. Because what it does is it allows the nonprofit to build up some cushions, some reserves, some funds that they can use to invest and grow in the future. So we have this kind of conundrum of surpluses, but not with our money, which is one of the messages that foundations often send that I think we really have to address.
Is taken into consideration there the idea that trying to actually zero out can be bigger stressor on an organization, too, if they're so focused on
it's that. It's one of the biggest stressors. There's a phrase that a researcher in Boston uses where she calls it the current services trap. The trap is that if I have $10 left at the end of the fiscal year, I should use it immediately to address some current need. It's a trap. Rather than thinking, I should take this $10 and use it to really build up my financial health for the future, whether it's by having some better staff or some training or some technology or some research and evaluation or reserve. But it's this short-term, long-term. And I know that one of the questions that foundations often talk about is this question about generational equity, the question about do you spend it all now or do you save some of it for generations to come? Think of it exactly the same way with nonprofits. There's a generational equity question that has to do with if we spend it all now and if our funders and supporters insist that we spend it all now, what are we doing for the future members of the community or constituents we're going to serve? It's the short-term, long-term. It's the same question.
Can you talk at all about what you think the difference is between when a foundation says the word risk and then a nonprofit says the word risk? Do you think that means different financial things to them?
I've never really thought about that. I actually do think that they mean different things. I think that when a foundation, this is of course a very blanket statement, I think that when a foundation says risk, they're really thinking about new and innovative and frankly a little bit of the bright shiny penny idea, which is try something new and different that has never been done before. Whereas a well-led nonprofit, when they talk about risk, will often be talking about the risk that it takes to scale and grow or to deepen the work that they do versus doing it differently. Really well nonprofits actually have well-designed programs where they know what works, they know how to evaluate it, they know how they know the indicators of whether or not it's successful, and the risk probably is taking that bigger or taking it deeper or going back a couple steps further in the preventative cycle versus try something entirely new.
So it's sort of a difference between flashiness and capacity building.
I'll go with it. So flashiness, capacity building, but also really strategic growth. Strategic growth is risky from the nonprofit side, mostly for the financial questions. Not so much because if they know their program is successful and works and it's designed and they know how to adapt it and change, the program isn't the risk. The finances are the risk.
Can you identify like two or three things a lot of nonprofit organizations express that they find challenging when, whether it be reporting on funds that they're using or seeking out funds, that what are the most common stress points for a nonprofit when it comes to their financial relationship to a funder?
I think that probably the most common stress points with the relationship has to do with being asked to kind of the out of balance burden sometimes for a relatively small grant proportional to the nonprofit and the amount of work that it takes to both request and report on it. So if I'm a $2 million organization and I have a $20,000 grant that requires an entirely different set of indicators, measures, and reports, it may not be a wise investment for the nonprofit to put the time in, and yet they want to have the relationship with that funder. So part of it has to do with just the burden of reporting. And some of it, I know that nonprofits often talk about how difficult it is to manage restricted funding because of those restrictions versus the more sometimes called general operating support. I actually prefer the term core mission support. The idea of core mission support says the funder is essentially communicating to the nonprofit, we trust that you know what you're doing and you're going to accomplish your mission. So here, use this the way that you think is most important. I actually think that there are times where restricted funds are a very healthy thing for a nonprofit. If you're running a multi-service social service program and you have a really vibrant, robust teen program that's really effective and you have a funder interested in supporting it, and you know how to run your program and your budget and allocate your expenses appropriately so that it's accurate, restricted funds are core mission support for that teen program. But there's not always a we're not always talking the same language when we're talking about that. So I think a lot of our work is actually with the nonprofits, helping them actually understand how to understand the full true cost of that program, how to express it, how to communicate about it, so that then they can actually have a healthy amount of funding for it. When we talk about restricted funding, though, going back to that kind of surplus or ending at a zero, this is a place where this often comes up, because in most cases, when you're applying for a project or program grant, the expectation is that it's going to end with zero. So then the question is where does the surplus come? With somebody else's money.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, you run out of somebody else's. And this is particularly difficult, you know, for nonprofits that have multiple sources of revenue. Foundations are often a part of it, but almost never all of it. If government is one of the other sources, it's virtually impossible to have a surplus with government money. It's just so enmeshed in the bureaucracy and the structure of most government. The question is, where does the nonprofit get to build in the elbow room? So foundations, again, if there's a trusting relationship that you think they're accomplishing their goals, that's a place that foundations can be enormously helpful to build healthy nonprofits.
Do you see big or small changes happening in the larger social sector, but even specific to, it seems like there's structural changes, there's some new ideas about mm-hmm. models for mm-hmm. nonprofits, mm-hmm. which impact the dynamic with funders and those nonprofits?
Yeah, I think that there are a number of changes happening. Some of them are more visible and look to be more different and more kind of shiny, and others are much more gradual and I think probably more lasting. The more lasting change, I think, is that, frankly, nonprofits are getting much savvier about their business models and the way the business side of their organization works, that it's more than revenue, that it's also what does it cost them to accomplish their mission, what's the infrastructure that they have and all the systems, who are the people, what kind of assets, you know, what kind of capital do they need, whether it's cash or buildings or endowments or anything else, and actually understanding how that all works together and how it has to be really married to the strategic plan. So I think that we're seeing gradually happen. I think that is partly accompanied by, really, we're in a wave of major leadership succession in the sector that we've always known was coming, but now is when it's really coming. And that's an opportunity to really think differently strategically. It doesn't necessarily, at least from what I'm seeing, mean that we're seeing really entirely different kind of organizations. So I know that there's been a fair amount of attention and interest in things like public benefit corporations and some new funding models that have to do more with that kind of social entrepreneur that's a little bit of a hybrid between nonprofit and for-profit. I think that will be an element and a piece of it. I think that by and large, the 501c3 nonprofit charity that relies on contributed income will continue to be really the major driver of a lot of this work. So I think that we're more likely to see some changes at the edges rather than a wholesale change.
My last question that I didn't prepare you for at all is, are there really good books or websites, some kind of resources that you send people towards?
Well, naturally, I send people to the nonprofitsassistancefund.org website. Thank you, Levi. And we have enormous number of resources for nonprofits and that are useful for foundations. We have a blog that we write really about kind of emerging issues. The other three things that I read, because I think that this is where the smart people are writing, is I read Chronicle Philanthropy, I read Stanford Social Innovation Review, and I read Nonprofit Quarterly. And generally, I will find the people who are kind of thinking about both the kind of strategic changes happening with nonprofits and the emerging issues, the new questions, the new things that are happening. The current issue of the Chronicle, for example, has a really interesting series of articles about the changes happening in fundraising and development that are kind of builds off this most recent study that the Haas Foundation funded, really about kind of a critical moment in philanthropy and fundraising. So there's new thoughts happening and new leaders emerging.
Excellent. Well, thank you for talking to me, Kate.
You're welcome. Thanks.
Fast Forward is produced by the Minnesota Council on Foundations. Go to mcf.org for more great programs and opportunities.